and we can go ahead in your name, Jesus Christ. Amen. Today we're doing open ears and full hands. Now I talk about open ears. What's open ears? That's the ability to listen and to take heart or take to heart what you hear. I'll talk about full hands. The Lord may fill your hand. The question is, what do you do with what He's put in your hand? And your life is measured by what you do and by what you say. And I want you to notice how Jesus used this term, open ear. He who has ears, let him hear. Now, who normally doesn't have ears? Very few. You know, the 16 times Jesus uses this phrase, about 7 of them are to the churches in the book of Revelation. So it's talking about us. And each time Jesus said this, he meant it as a call to change, to listen, and to heed. And, of course, that will result in change. So we're going to talk about hearing and speaking, ears and tongues. When you put this together in the book of Proverbs, what a man speaks to others is from the heart. And what a man hears from others affects the heart. All speech has an effect on your heart, whether you realize it or not. We could say that speech and action reveals character. And where does character come from? The Bible calls it the heart. That's a figure of speech. It means what's inside of you as a person. So when we come to the first proverb we're going to look at, a good place to start, 4:23, guarding your heart, watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it the springs of life. And the idea here is come the springs of life. So how do you guard what's inside of yourself? Well, you have to protect yourself from what you see, from what you hear, and even from what you think about. And you know, most of us, we go along thinking thoughts all the time, and we never stop to think. I can control what I think. Most people have the impression that what I think, I can't help what I think. Even your thoughts, you have to guard yourself from your own thoughts. But if you start to think about something that upsets you, you have a choice to not think about it. And that's guarding your heart so it doesn't have an effect on you long term. Now, the free spirit, people that live free, they have no restraints. The free spirit is one who is not careful with his heart. It's not just himself. He is destructive to himself, yes, but he's destructive to others. If the naive person sees that and is fascinated by him, what's going to happen to the naive? That's going to turn him to a path of destruction. Look at this one, 23:6-7. This is a long one. This is a warning. Do not eat the bread of a selfish man or desire his delicacies. For as he thinks within himself, so he is. He is selfish. He says to you, eat and drink. He's seemingly generous, but his heart is not with you. What is on the inside may not be readily revealed. Don't be trusting too quickly about someone who is nice to you. Here's a longer one. This one really speaks to more true godly wisdom rather than the previous proverb. True godly wisdom is wisdom that is self-control, which comes through instruction and discipline. So here's what it says. Apply your heart to discipline and your ears to words of knowledge. Do not hold back discipline from the child. Although you strike him with a rod, he will not die. You shall strike him with a rod and rescue his soul from Sheol, from destruction, from death. My son, if your heart is wise, my own heart will also be glad, and my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. How do you raise a child who the book of Proverbs assumes is naive, doesn't know anything, and will learn from the first person who makes an impact and impression on him? If that's not the father who loves him, it's going to be somebody else. It's guaranteed. It's going to be somebody. Somebody who maybe is evil in heart, but says, oh, come, you know, eat and drink with me. I'll show you a good time. Corrupts that child. So the middle section here is you must discipline the child. Now, that does not mean that the only means of discipline is to strike with the rod. The striking with the rod is the extremis. The child who seems to be so rebellious and so intractable, that may be what it takes. But if that's what it takes, don't hold it back, because that will save that child from destruction. Now, if the child will listen to your words and follow your example, you don't have to use the rod. Now, here's the result of doing what it says in disciplining your son. Here's the result. My son, if your heart is wise, my own heart will be glad. If my discipline resulted in your wisdom, that makes me happy. My inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. When I hear you say back to me what I taught you, I rejoice inside. This is true godly wisdom being put into a child, who the child then commits to true godly wisdom through instruction and discipline. And discipline is discipleship. And in the book of Proverbs, discipleship and discipline come from parents. It also comes from the Lord. Because once you leave your parents, and they're no longer over you to discipline you, it's going to come from the Lord. Discipline is the difference between raising up a fool or a wise man. And the same is true for us. The father is pleased with the character of the child when the child speaks back to him the words he spoke to him. God as our father feels the same way toward us when we show wisdom to others and speak back wisdom to him. And discipline is from the parents. Discipline is from the Lord. Discipline can then be internalized and come from within ourselves. We can be self-disciplined, self-restrained. That's the next proverb. 16:32, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. So one who is able to rule his own spirit, in a sense, has more might and more strength and more character and more power than someone who can take an entire city. You add this proverb, 25:28, that's a contrast proverb. A city that is broken into is like a city without walls. And that's like a man who has no control over his spirit. That's the free spirit. That's the one who cannot control his anger. There's a contrast here, a contrast in saying a city that's got strong walls and a city that's been broken down. The man who cannot control himself is broken down. It's two kinds of men. The wise man is stronger than the mighty walled city. And the wise man's security is not in the walls of the city. The wise man's security is in the Lord. Since he fears the Lord, he knows the Lord is going to take care of him. Do you ever notice how anger affects your thinking? Fear affects your thinking? You're on your way to depression, or you're on your way to a boiling over and striking out at someone. And it all comes from the way you think, because of the way you felt. Emotions are so fluid. You can be angry at someone this week, and next week somebody will mention it, and you won't even remember it. Why? Because the feeling is gone. What remains? The reality of your life. If you strike out in anger, that then becomes reality, because that's an action that's now recorded for all of history, for everybody to look back and say, why did you do that? And it's a result of your thinking, which was a result of your emotions. So these proverbs are really causing a person to stop and think that if I can't control my anger, I may end up like a city that's broken down. I may do something that completely destroy my life. And in Galatians it says the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. Poses the question, well, who's in control of my life, the Holy Spirit or me? The answer is yes. That's guarding the heart. What you see, what you hear, and what you think. Well, that's hearing as affects the heart. Now we have speaking, speech, the tongue. The Bible's full of illustrations, full of metaphors about the tongue. Here's just a few I've listed. The tongue is the agent of many evils. It's slander, flattery, arrogance, gossip, falsehood. It's as poisonous as a snake, as sharp as a sword. James says it's like a little flame that can set the world on fire. The tongue can be also an implement for good. The point is, with the tongue, both life and death are in its power. So it's through the tongue you can bring someone to eternal life. It's through the tongue you can bless someone. Good proverb for this, the mouth. Mouth and lips and tongue, they all kind of go together. Mouth of the righteous flows with wisdom. But the perverted tongue will be cut out. Now, the perverted tongue is one who takes truth and twists it. The word perversion in Hebrew, remember I've mentioned this before, is to twist or to make upside down, call evil good and good evil. That will be cut out. That will be brought to destruction, brought to an end. The lips of the righteous bring forth what is good, but the mouth of the wicked brings forth what is perverted. So again, you have this perversion of wisdom. What is good, the wicked mouth perverts it. The mouth of the righteous. What would the opposite of that be? Well, that's the mouth of the unrighteous, the mouth of the wicked. The mouth of the righteous, out of his mouth comes wisdom. The mouth of the wicked, out of that comes perversity, the opposite of wisdom. Which one's going to live on? Well, the mouth of the righteous flows with wisdom and will go on. But the perverted tongue will be cut out. It'll be cut off. It'll be brought to an end. The question posed here is which would you want to be? And the same thing, do you want to bring forth what is good in your life, not only in your life, but in the lives of others? Then seek wisdom. Seek righteousness in your actions. Otherwise, you're doing what is wicked. Now, God hates boastful, arrogant speech. He hates the speech of the arrogant. God hates the mouth of the wicked. He hates the perverted tongue. We saw that last week, Proverbs 8:13, that pride and arrogance and the evil way and the perverted mouth, what he says, I hate. God says, I hate that. I hate the person as well as what the person does, and I will bring the person to destruction. On the other hand, the tongue of the righteous man is valued. It's like pure silver. There's a proverb that says that. And this proverb, or these three proverbs, they're comparing the speech of the righteous man with the proud and the wicked man, or the man of wisdom with the proud and the wicked man. All three of these. The tongue of the righteous is like choice silver. It's valuable. It will bring forth good things. The heart of the wicked is little. What's little? What's that mean? Little what? Little value. Not worth much. Will not bring forth anything valuable. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. Think of springs of water. But the mouth of the wicked not only does not bring forth fountains of water, it conceals violence. Now that's an interesting proverb. Because the mouth of the righteous wants you to know what's inside of him and he wants to share it with you and it's valuable. The mouth of the wicked hides who he really is. And what he really is violence. So what's going to come forth from him? Violence. And that we talked about this last week. The proud man who has the kind of that seething pride that if you cross him, he's going to take vengeance. He's going to get even. Now, a soothing tongue, this is a tree of life. It lifts people up. It encourages people. If someone is down, suffering mental agony, a soothing tongue can bring them out of this darkness. But perversion in it crushes the spirit. Perversion in the tongue. Who would be speaking with perversion in his tongue? The wicked man. He's going to speak words that are perverse, that are going to lead to destruction, that are actually going to make it worse. So when you come down, the summary of this is that the wise man, that the one who speaks wisely brings peace and health, what the Hebrews call shalom. That's like wholesome food would be to the body. That's like good food, a good diet. That's what this means when it says the soothing tongue is like a tree of life. Now, there's a proverb that expresses that. The fruit of a man's mouth will satisfy his stomach, and he will be satisfied by the product of his lips. That's true, you know. I mean, if you're hungry and you eat a good meal, aren't you satisfied? And that food is gone in your mouth, through your lips, over your tongue, down into your stomach, and you're satisfied by it. In one sense, on the surface, this is talking about eating. But look at how he switches into 21. He says, I'm not really talking about food here. I'm talking about life and death issues. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Those who love what? He's talking about two different kinds of people here. Those who love death are going to eat the fruit of death. Those who love life are going to eat the fruit of life. And the fruit of the man's mouth will satisfy his stomach. He will be satisfied with the product of his lips. If he's a proud man, he's interested in the power of death. Now, he wouldn't call it that. That's where he's going. The righteous man is interested in totally different things. But they're both satisfied by their pursuit. And one's going to go one way and the one's going to go the other. So in a sense, you could say you are what you eat. If you eat a healthy diet, you'll be a healthy person. This says you are what you speak. The proud man is going to speak one way. The righteous man is going to speak another way. Both men will have an impact on those who hear him. One will lead people to death and destruction. One will lead people to life and good things. What you think in your heart is what you are. And the one proverb that really brings that out is negative, but it's also true in the positive sense. And I think this is an illustration of that positive sense. What you think in your mind is what you are. And what you are is the impact you will have on those around you. This is where the whole concept of encouraging other Christians comes in. What you hear from someone else seems to have a greater impact than what you tell yourself. If what you're telling yourself is the same thing they tell you, that reinforces that. There's a whole idea of fellowship, encouragement, discipleship. It all comes together. Well, let's talk about speech. Speech in the ear. So there's like 38 Proverbs that deal with hearing and ears. And hearing in Hebrew is shema, and ears are another word. But we'll talk about speech, the ear. 22:17, incline your ear and hear, that's shema, the words of the wise. And apply your mind, and that's the Hebrew word for heart, to my knowledge. That's the Hebrew word for teaching. So incline your ear and hear the words of the wise, and apply your heart to my teaching, to my knowledge. All the knowledge base that I put into this Bible, this ties hearing and speech and heart all together. Because incline your ear to hear what? Words that God has spoken. And since character determines what you learn, what you want to learn, this next proverb really is important. The evildoer listens to wicked lips, and the liar pays attention to a destructive tongue. Why? Why would somebody want to listen to wicked speech? That's what they want to learn. What they want to learn tells you about their character. It is a window into what they're really like inside. Now, gossip is speech. And Proverbs brings together these two things. Proverbs tells us that people hunger for gossip. Gossip is like arsenic-laced chocolates. It's pretty on the outside, looks good, but it is poison. It is so sweet and so good in your mouth, but it's so deadly once it goes down. So gossip is an illustration of that. It really sounds good. It sounds interesting. Ooh, I like this. But you don't realize what it's doing to your heart, what it's doing to your character. This is one of the things. This really applies here to the whole notion of guarding your heart. Because Proverbs 26:22 really kind of brings this out. The words of a whisper are like dainty morsels. It's like really good chocolate. And they go down to the innermost parts of the body. That's the warning. It doesn't say that the words of a whisper are like dainty morsels and they will kill you. It's not that direct. But indirectly, it's warning you this goes down in the very innermost parts of your body. That is your heart. That is what you think, what you desire, what you will to do. It'll show up in your actions. This next one tells us that both the listener and the tale teller are both corrupted by gossip. So you might think, well, the only thing a gossip hurts is themselves. That's not true. He who goes about as a slanderer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a gossip. Why does it say so directly, do not associate with a gossip? Because what that gossip is inside himself, that will affect you. It will go down. Anything you hear that he tells you goes down into your innermost parts. And what will that do to your thinking? What will that do to your reality from that point on, once you listen to gossip? The person who hears gossip may never spread the story that he hears. He may never tell anybody else. But he allowed it to be told. So by doing nothing, you're promoting evil. So the listener may never spread the story, but the reality is that the gossip kills the character of the speaker, kills the character of the person who tells the story, and it kills the character of the person slandered. So what you have are reputations that are lost and ruined forever. The gossip's reputation, it's bad, because, you know, if somebody comes up to you and tells you something continually, like, you know, hear about this person, hear about this person, hear about this person, you know what you got to be thinking about when they walk away from you, the next person they talk to, who are they going to be talking about? You! The people who like to listen to gossip, they have destroyed their own character. That's reputation. And, of course, the person slandered. If what you have said about that person isn't true, it still ruins his reputation. Now, what's the best response to gossip, you think? Who said walk away? Oh, you said walk away. Okay, that's probably number one for most people. The easiest thing to do is flee. Paul said flee immorality. Because you don't have to commit to anything, just leave. I like what Paul says, flee immorality. We don't think of gossip as immorality. Gossip is immoral. Gossip is wicked. And so you walk away. Now, the next number two thing you can do, if you have more guts, suppose if you want to stay in conversation, I guess mentally walk away, change the subject. But the harder thing to do, and this takes a little more courage, to say, why are you telling me this? Look them right in the eye and say, why are you telling me this? This is wicked. This is wrong. This takes some guts. It's easier to walk away. But to confront somebody and say, why are you telling this? You know what this does to a gossip? Completely throws them off their game. Completely disarm them. You may be the one to all of a sudden, for the first time, challenge them in such a way they may rethink, why am I doing this? And you know, if God begins to work in their heart, they can change. Well, that brings us down to the final one, that's generosity. How does this tie together? How does this tie together with the open hand? The full hand becomes the open hand. And generosity is not what you have, but what you are. So there's about 20 Proverbs that deal with this, that deal with money. And there's nothing reveals the character better than a way the person handles money. This is something Jesus was famous for teaching about. If you fear God and then hear God and then grow in wisdom, shows up as generosity. And you think only in generosity in terms of money, but money is not really the measure of generosity. The measure of generosity is not how rich you are, how much money you have, but how willing are you to share your money, whether you have a lot or a little. So that comes to the statement, generosity is not what you have, but what you are. How do we obtain wealth? How do we obtain our money? Well, number one, by God's blessing. God fills our hand, and that's grace. If you don't recognize that as grace, then how did you get your wealth? You deserved it. You earned it. And it's totally because of you that you have it. 10:22, it is the blessing of the Lord that makes rich. And when the Lord makes rich, he doesn't add sorrow to it. Things that make you feel bad about being rich. You are grateful to be rich because you realize it's by grace. And so there's no sorrow with it. You're delighted with it because, again, you're fearing the Lord. You're growing in wisdom. The Lord is delighted with your wisdom. Therefore, you delight in the Lord. But that's not the only way to obtain wealth. It might sound like a contradiction from what I've just said, but the other way to obtain wealth is by your own honest work. It really, truly is by discipline. Wealth by fraud dwindles, but the one who gathers by labor increases. Increases what? Increases wealth. The idea is here is that if you defraud people, you'll get rich, but those riches go away quickly. It seems like they slip through your fingers. The one who gathers by labor increases his wealth. It is God who's still working to fill your hand. Why would a person be disciplined and wise? Because he fears the Lord, he honors the Lord, and the Lord seems to bless him in his endeavors and what he does. But where's the credit go that he has provided not only the means of wealth and given you wealth, but he's provided you the instruction that makes you wise, that allows you to be disciplined and rule over your life? Here's the thing. The righteous man can have great wealth. See, the one who gathers by labor increases, and he can increase a lot. And the wicked can have a great amount of money. So both men can be rich. What's the difference? It's the lifestyle. It's what they do. Great wealth is the house of the righteous. But trouble is in the income of the wicked. These are antithetical lines. This is antithetical poetry. One line is the opposite of the other. You have to balance them out. Great wealth is the house of the righteous. The balance on the other side is there's great wealth in the house of the wicked as well, but in the house of the righteous, there is no trouble. But in the house of the wicked, even though they have great wealth, there's a lot of trouble. Because what they do and what they say and what they think breeds destruction, breeds death. There is no peace. They're not concerned about the well-being of others. They really will create more trouble for others by gaining their wealth. They will hurt people to gain their wealth. They don't care who they walk on to gain their wealth or who they cheat. But great wealth in the house of the righteous, how's it obtained? It's obtained through the gifts of the Lord, grace, and their own discipline, which is a result of honoring the Lord. They don't walk on people. They don't hurt people to come to great wealth. This is another one of my favorites, is this one, this proverb. I like that one. So, okay, that is obtaining wealth. What about using wealth? Using wealth means helping those who are in need. Helping those who are in need. It can be a family member. It could mean the poor, those who simply are at the bottom rungs of society. It could mean immigrants. It could mean the people who are afflicted. What's affliction? People who get sick. They have a good job. They have a good life. All of a sudden they get sick. They get cancer. They lose their job. They lose their job. They lose their health insurance. Lose their health insurance. Now they got these huge medical bills because they got cancer. They are afflicted. And if you know them, you can help. People are storm victims right now in Texas and in Florida. Those are afflicted people. They're people who are doing fine last week. Next week, not so fine. 24 and 25 kind of brings this out. There's one who scatters and increases more. There's one who withholds what is justly due, and yet it results only in want. The generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. This is a general principle of wisdom. This is not guaranteed. There's no guarantee that if you give to people out of your wealth, you're going to get that wealth back. This is not health and wealth preaching. There is one who scatters, and when he scatters, he increases more. Now, it doesn't say what more he increases. And yet there's one who withholds what is justly due. And here's the antithetical. He withholds what is justly due. And that's not just paying your mortgage at the first of the month. That's not just paying your debts. What this is talking about in other places in Proverbs as well is when you see a poor person and you're not willing to help them and you are rich, then that's going to result in want. Want for who? Certainly for them, because they need the help and you're able to help. Going to result in want for you. You yourself will not be satisfied by holding on to your wealth. That you yourself are eating away and corroding your insides by not helping someone else. The generous man will be prosperous. He who waters himself will be watered. That's a general principle. You will be blessed back. Your life in total will be blessed. Verse 22:9, he who is generous will be blessed, for he gives some of his food to the poor. That is a blessing. It's a blessing for you to give your money away. I think the principle here is that God blesses the generous person with wealth so that he can give that wealth to those who need it. What is the rich man? The wise rich man is a channel that God uses to reach the afflicted. So when you look at yourself and you look at your money, you're a channel to it goes out to others. Think about it. This isn't a zero-sum game. There's not just so much money in the pie, and if Joe over there gets a little bit more, then I'm going to get a little bit less. That's totally unbiblical. There is no end to the amount of money that God can provide, the amount of wealth that God can provide to the world. So when you look at someone and saying, they're getting something I don't think they deserve, that is absolutely wicked. If you trust in God, you can say, God, if I give to him, I know you can provide me what I've given away. I know you can do that because it's not a zero-sum game. It's not just one big pie. God has all the cattle and all the hills and all the world. It's all in his hand. Now, he could provide directly. He could come down out of heaven and give everybody money. He doesn't do that. He's created the world that I want to show that I am able to make men righteous and wise in such a way they will provide and I will provide through them. Again, it's not dependent on how rich you are. It's how willing are you to give of what you have. Now, the rich man who's wicked, he's not generous. He's consumed with getting more, not for others, but for himself. The driving goal of the rich man, there's never enough money. But for the wise man, whatever he has is enough, and he's got enough to be able to share. Security is another use of wealth. This is a valid use of wealth. The rich man's wealth is in his fortress. The ruin of the poor is in their poverty. Now, it's not making a distinction between whether this rich man is wise or not. It's not talking about a rich man who may be saved, a rich man who's not saved, or a rich man who's wise and a rich man who's not wise. It is true. This proverb, what it says is absolutely true. The rich man's wealth is his fortress. That means he gets security from his wealth. The ruin of the poor is their poverty. He doesn't have the power. He doesn't have the ability to live. He's more susceptible to disease. He's more susceptible to bandits. He's more susceptible to all kinds of problems that the rich man doesn't have. So it's not making a distinction of character here. It's just making a statement of fact. Wealth brings security. And it's not saying that it's wrong. It's just saying that's just the way it is. So would you rather be rich or would you rather be poor? Proverbs is saying it's far better to be rich than to be poor. But the question then in the book of Proverbs is, what kind of rich? Security can't be in the money. It's got to be in God. So you can't make the money God. You make God God. And then that means you're going to use your money Your money's not going to use you. And there's the difference. Money is a wonderful servant to help others. It's a terrible master. It becomes a god. Encourage friendships. Here's another reason for money. It encourages friendships. It's hard to make friends with a poor person. The poor is hated even by his neighbor. Same country, the same kind of neighborhood, the same kind of house. But all of a sudden he's poor. Nobody wants anything to do with him. But those who love the rich are many. Everybody loves a rich man. They can get something from him. Wealth adds many friends, but a poor man is separated from his friend. So all of a sudden a man becomes poor, his friends go away. He was rich, now he falls into calamity, and his friends disappear. This isn't saying this is right or wrong here. This is just saying this is the way it is. So these contrasts are between having money and being poor, and what do they teach us? The tendency of the human nature is to do what? Stay away from the poor. You avoid them. Why? Number one, I can think of a few reasons in my own life. Number one, they make you feel guilty. They're going to maybe ask me for help. And if I'm not generous by nature, and who's generous by nature? I'm going to feel more guilty, and I'm going to go, gosh. They look bad, so you really don't want to have them hanging around your neighborhood because they're not very well kept, and you don't want to be seen with them. So these verses tell us how we act. These verses are really telling us how we really think. It's not saying anything about how God wants us to act. What does God want? God wants us to grow in wisdom, first of all. See, God doesn't say, I want everybody to be generous. No, he doesn't do it that way. God says, I want you to come to me. I want to instruct you. I want to teach you. I will discipline you a little bit. I'll correct you. But what my goal is here is I want you to be a generous person. Because I'm generous with you, I want you to be generous with others. God knows what we're like. But he wants to make us wise so that we become generous so that he can help these people that need help. So a wise man who fears the Lord is made wise by the instruction that he hears. So one who is gracious to a poor man really is lending to the Lord. The one who gives to a poor man really knows why he's giving to this poor man. He knows he's simply a channel. That he's providing money that the Lord has given him. And then he knows the Lord's going to give it back. Not maybe in terms of dollar for dollar or giving everything he's given away, but he's going to fill his life with blessing that may go beyond money. He's going to have other things come into his life that God will give him. He will pay him for his good deed. I'm going to close with this C.S. Lewis quote, because this really is the heart of wisdom, fearing the Lord. If anyone would like to acquire humility, first step is to realize that you're proud. And to be proud is to be wicked. And to be wicked is to be hated by God. And C.S. Lewis says that's a big step. If you think you are not conceited, it means you're very conceited indeed. That's C.S. Lewis. We saw that last week from his book, Mere Christianity. So what I've said today about work and about money, I'm going to look at this people who don't want to work, sluggards. These are foolish people. We're going to talk about sluggards and riddles. And riddles are the whole chapter 30, from Agur, a Gentile, who really is the only one who provides these riddles in Proverbs that really rack your brain to think, what do these things mean? So we're going to look at that next week. And then on the 17th, we're going to look at friendship. On the 24th, we're going to look at family. And on the 1st, in October, with the book of Thessalonians, both books, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians. So that's where we're going to go after we finish up these couple topics in Proverbs. Dear Father, we do thank you for your word. We thank you.